This podcast is brought to you by Gridiron Heroics Media.
Hey folks, welcome to the BMAC and the Knox FCS show, where we give our take on week three of the regular season. I'm Brian McLaughlin, and I'm joined as always by my good buddy and partner in pod, Anthony Knockreiner. Anthony, what's up this week? And what's up in general, man?
Not much, man. I'm just coming off the high of Sunday football, watching the Bucks beat the Saints, finally.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. But no, I mean, a great weekend. Really enjoyed some of the results that we got. And you know what? I know we're going to talk about this game here in a second, Brian. But at the same time, just another great week of FCS football. But the fact that how many people were shocked that NDSU didn't beat Arizona.
I know. Isn't that just crazy to even think about?
Exactly. Like, but the fact that we're talking about an FCS school. Now, again, North Dakota State has been a dynasty team. I mean, the amount of national championships they have won. But the fact that so many people were surprised that they didn't win over an FBS P5 program in Arizona. Yeah. Just speaks volumes in a good way. I'm not saying this in a bad way. I'm just saying just how far has the FCS come, I guess, to the point where they've got a team in its division that, you know, everybody actually expects to beat up on some of the lower P5 programs.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think a lot of people probably lost money, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because, I mean, think about it. I want to say the line was 2.5 or 3.5 or something like that. I'm guaranteeing you that a lot of FCS fans were sitting there going, I know what's going to happen here, and nobody else does. And in the end, those of us who know the FCS, we were wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't really that wrong. I mean, the bottom line is, yes, NDSU has had success, you know, against the FBS since the last time they lost one. I think that was 2009. And so for 13 years, when they actually have faced an FBS team that has the Coyotes to schedule NDSU, they've won. And when they've beaten the P5 teams, you know, the ones that really jump off the page, obviously, are Iowa and Kansas State. When they've beaten those teams, those games have been good. It's not like they beat them by 21 points. I mean, those have generally been really good games till the very end. And really, the Arizona game this weekend was no different. It's just the score didn't go the way that they had hoped, you know. So, it was still a hell of a game. I watched every minute of it. I don't usually watch football at, like, 3 in the morning Eastern, but I was doing it Saturday night. You know, that game kicked off at 11 since it was in Tucson, Arizona. And it was a good one the whole way. So I think we're going to dig more into the details of that one in a second. But that was a great game. And last thing I got to say before we get rolling here is NDSU fans, you know, being from the Midwest, are generally kind of upbeat, positive people and fans. You know, it's not like Philadelphia fans. No offense to Philadelphia fans, but you know where I'm going with that. They tend to see, you know, the cup half full. And they were picking apart the game Saturday night. And you can take that any way you want. I mean, not in a nasty sense, not in a let's fire the coach. They're not stupid like Gator fans, you know, like my alma mater. But they were like, man, we could have done this better. We could have done this better. And that is, like you said, Anthony, that's an example of how amazing this program is that they expect to go into the Pac-12 and win. I mean, that's just amazing. And I will say this, having watched the end of the Northern Arizona upset over Arizona last year, that's not the same Arizona team. They really have some weapons. And we'll get into the breakdown of that. That's a huge topic. I mean, because I think we all thought that that would go the other way. But anyway, so we're going to break down a couple things, folks. We're going to kick off. We tape on Mondays generally, especially with the recap. And the poll, the coaches poll, has come out. I voted in the media poll just a bit ago. Knock, let's just start with you. I mean, was there anything about the poll that kind of jumped out to you? I can rattle it off. Like, let's rattle out the top 10 real quick. North Dakota State, big. It was great to see North Dakota State stay at number one, but I'm a little surprised that they lost first place votes. But NDSU is still number one, Montana two, South Dakota State three, Missouri State, after nearly beating Arkansas, comes in at four. They're actually tied with Montana State in the fourth place position based on the points accumulated in the voting process. Sacramento State at six, Incarnate Word in seven. That's amazing and warranted too, by the way. They're playing really well. Delaware at eight, Chattanooga at nine, Villanova at 10. Knock, what's your thoughts initially?
So that's the coaches' poll on how that ranking went. So I'll you know, real quick, Brian, just let me run over the stats poll, because it's interesting, because it's usually the same cast of characters. But right now you got a tie at number two between Montana and South Dakota State, a tie between Incarnate Word and Montana State at four, and Missouri State, Sacramento State, Delaware, Villanova, and Chattanooga. So, you know, again, we're talking about the same teams here. Again, just a little bit of change. I guess the biggest thing for me, Brian, is the fact that I fully believe that Montana is actually the number two team.
Yeah.
You know, I really think that the way they've played, the way they've dominated, you already know they have the defense. Special teams has made big-time plays already, so you know they're going to be an elite in that area as well. And so the question's always been, which is weird considering some previous history with Montana's offense, it was their quarterback position. But Lucas Johnson has continued to just look better and better every single game. So I think for me, I'm not surprised that the coaches have Montana at two. I am surprised that Montana was getting first place votes, because I just, again, how many times do we have to learn? Nobody's knocked off North Dakota State yet in the playoffs outside of the spring year. And South Dakota State has done it in the regular season. Yes. But again, it's not something that's been repeated as well. So, I know we talked about this is we're recapping everything. We are going to have a preview episode coming out a little bit later this week. And with that, I will have my contender list to actually who can take down North Dakota State, because as we mentioned last week, and it continues to be mentioned here, Brian, we're really talking about, okay, what team can knock off North Dakota State? Because that's who we continually see in Frisco, and that is always the question that gets asked leading into the Frisco week. Can this team actually knock off the Bison? And then after we watch the Bison win again, it's always, okay, which team can actually knock them off next year? So really this comes down to, you know, who we think that can be that team. I think Montana's a good pick at number two, both in the media and the coaches' poll. I will say this, I like Incarnate Word. I'm not giving Incarnate Word a bad rap here or saying anything bad about them. I am a little surprised that in the media poll, Missouri State takes a back seat to Incarnate Word, because Missouri State did take Arkansas and had a lead in the fourth quarter. And you know, unfortunately, they didn't have enough to beat Arkansas. But again, that's the 10th ranked team in the country. That was impressive.
Yeah, yeah. I think that we're seeing, obviously, some of the same things here. I like what Incarnate Word is doing this year. You know, they had a good win over an FBS in Nevada. And, you know, one feather in their cap with FCS was beating Southern Illinois by 35. And Southern Illinois just beat the Big Ten's Northwestern this past weekend. So, you know, Incarnate Word is definitely a top 10 team. I don't know, like in the media poll, they're actually tied again because voters, there's a point system to the voting, of course, where you get so many points for, you know, having somebody fifth place or seventh place, whatever. Incarnate Word is tied with Montana State for the number four spot. I think that's a little too high, and I'm a little surprised, yes, that they're ahead of Missouri State, but, you know, we're probably splitting hairs. Whenever we get to this part of the year, we're splitting hairs. Who are we kidding? You know, we don't have a lot of data yet. You know, how much more impressive is Incarnate Word's win over Nevada versus Missouri State giving Arkansas all at once before falling by 11, going into the fourth quarter, you know, basically looking like they could win Missouri State it. So those are the things. I think other things that jump off the page when I look at both polls next to each other, Weber State is not getting enough love here, okay? In my poll ballot I filed last night, Sunday night, I had, and maybe I have them a little high, but Weber State is 3-0, has beaten Utah State by 28. That's obviously an FBS. And then they have two wins over Utah Tech, which is the former Dixie State, kind of a newer FCS team in the last 2 to 3 years, and they beat a D2. But they're doing this in impressive fashion. So I had Weber State a lot higher. Neither poll has them in the top 10. I mean, I could see most people not seeing them being as high as 4. Weber State is a top 10 team. And the coaches' poll has them at 12th. And I think the media poll does too. That's correct. Yep. They both do. So a little head scratcher there. There are a couple other things I'd react to. And let's be honest, folks. The coaches poll, I mean, I'm sure some coaches vote in it, but, you know, coaches are kind of sort of busy. And I've heard everything from the sports information directors to a grad assistant are the ones that actually vote in this sometimes. I know Steve Spurrier used to just absolutely admit as Florida's coach that what he would do is submit, you know, a couple strong feelings on the, you know, the morning of the vote or the night of the vote or whatever. He would just say, hey, just make sure Ole Miss looked pretty good, you know, by the score that I saw, because it's not like the coaches can watch other games unless they're off. You know, they're not, the coaches aren't junkies like you and me, Knock, where they're sitting there all Saturday with 7 different televisions watching a bunch of games. They're not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not even the coaches voting. Don't be fooled by that. I mean, coaches know teams, but they don't have time to keep track of 130 schools. So sometimes it's a staff member or something. So, you know, looking down the poll, I'm a little surprised by a couple things. Look, breaking it down, I like the coaches poll, except for Weber State being left out of the top 10. I really do. I think Stephen F. Austin being in the poll at 1-2, I have a lot of respect for this program. If you've ever listened to our podcast, you would know that. But right now, they have one win, and it's Alcorn State. They've lost the 2 FBSs. If you're already considering Jacksonville State an FBS, by the way, but they're 1-2. I just feel like there's room for other schools, but they're in the coaches' poll. Probably, if there was a 1-2 team, I think I would put in my poll, and I did in my ballot, it would be Southern Illinois. They just beat Northwestern. Now, Southern Illinois did lose to Incarnate Word, so they need to be behind Incarnate Word. And I think they lost to SEMO by a couple points, but they just beat Northwestern. You know, that's the only P5 win for an FCS team this year, for an FCS this year. So now, and for the record, last year there were 4 of those, 4 instances where an FCS beat a P5, which is actually a good year for that. So that's kind of my reaction, I guess. Knock. Anything else you want to add on that?
I know we'll get into it here in a little bit because of what Delaware did, but I mean, just overall, just looking at both the coaches in the media poll, for one thing for me is just the fact that I look who's ascending and who's descending right now. Uh-huh. I think Montana's idling, and not in a bad way. They're good. They're handling their business.
Yes, they are.
But I got to say, I think teams that I think are looking at a dissension right now, it's got to be South Dakota State. Just because I don't like what I'm seeing from their offense. Now, again, they did beat Butler, but they should be handling Butler. All right? So, again, I'm not trying to take too much out of the UC Davis or the Iowa game for that matter. But, again, the UC Davis one kind of struck out to me a little bit more. Then I also think Montana State's a team that is descending a little bit. Obviously, a big game against Eastern Washington. We'll preview that game in our preview episode. But at the same time, too, like, again, they played Murray State and Morehead State, and they beat them soundly like they should have, and then they just got throttled by Oregon State. I thought they'd put up a little bit more of a fight against Oregon State, and that clearly didn't happen. Teams that I think are on the ascension, you definitely got to put, Incarnate Word. Weber State's on that radar, and a team we'll talk about here is Delaware, considering what they did to Rhode Island this past weekend.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing for me. There's some teams that I'm seeing those, how you see the stock market. You see those red arrows, and there's teams that I'm seeing those green arrows. And right now, those are just a couple that I think are definitely solid red or solid green at this point.
Yeah, and I think there's something, when it comes to Montana State, I got to throw this in there in a reaction to what you just said. There's times when people come at you and go, "Why'd you drop Montana State?" And I go, I didn't drop Montana State because they lost to a P5. They did. They got hammered by Oregon State. But in general, I don't drop at all or much because you lost to a P5. You're supposed to lose to a P5. Okay? Those games really don't even matter toward the playoff picture unless it's a win. So, like, if Southern Illinois had lost to Northwestern this weekend, it would basically be wiped off the schedule and it wouldn't even be considered because they won. Yeah, it's a big bonus point or, 10 bonus points, whatever. Montana State, in my opinion, they haven't, I don't know that I would say they've descended. It's just that some other programs have done a little bit better on paper. And so, there's only so much room at the top. And
agreed.
I think that's, a Missouri State, popping up in the coaches poll, and Incarnate Word popping up in the media poll. If you look at these things, and those schools are kind of ascending. That's really more of what's happening here. It's not that the polls are ripping Montana State. And no. Montana State's not going to have to do a ton of stuff to ascend back up, once they get rolling, if that's what happens in the Big Sky. So, which is a tough conference. So,
right. And Brian, let me add this. I'm just saying from my own personal opinion, they're just a team that it's not so much that I don't think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be a playoff team. But again, we're talking about a team that just came off a national championship appearance. They're a team, they're a program now that wants to stay there. It was not that long ago that Montana State was towards the bottom of the Big Sky. I remember 2016, when Jeff Choate first got there, how much of a struggle that season was for Bobcats fans. Now, again, it was avenged because that season was worth it because they beat the Grizz at the end of the year, so that was always worth it. But I think my point is, and we see this with some teams, and normally Montana State, they do have a tough team. Usually, they've got a team out of the Missouri Valley that they're going to play that kind of can give you some data points to look at and say, okay, this was a tough team, so, okay, we feel a bit better. Because, and again, I'm not trying to trash Murray State or Morehead State by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not trying to say bad things about those teams because those guys are obviously trying. They're trying to win football games. But my point being is that Montana State, there's high expectations. And my worry is that because their non-conference was a little bit more on the softer side, are they going to be ready? Because as we've seen, Brian, and this is going to be something that we talk about a little bit later when we get into the Valley and Big Sky Challenge series. But as we've seen, the Big Sky Conference is deep. We've talked about it in years past, how this conference beats itself up. This year might be an even more bloodier bath.
Yeah. No doubt about it, man. Well, if this segment doesn't tell you that we really don't know a whole hell of a lot 3 weeks in, I don't know what would. But that's the way it is when you're in September. The one cool thing, though, about September is we may not have all the answers by this point, but there are results that have happened in the first three or four, if you count week zero, weeks, that will have an impact on the week of Thanksgiving. So what happens now matters. It's just we don't have all the answers yet. We don't have a whole lot of answers at all.
We're dealing with 3 weeks of data so far, and obviously we're dealing with scattered data because obviously, you know, we're talking about these FCS over FBS wins and how important those are and how much that can lead us into a season. But at the same time, you got teams that you do figure will factor into possibly a playoff discussion that are playing teams and collecting checks. So it's tough to really gather all the important things. But when you're talking about some teams and their strength to schedule the non-conference, it does kind of lead because, again, Montana State opens up Eastern Washington this week, and we'll talk about that game later. But it's just a question of, okay, because look at what happened. This is the perfect example. Southern Illinois. Last week, going into this game against Northwestern, Southern Illinois felt like, okay, they're dead in the water. Right. Like, I know it was early, and obviously they still have conference play. But we thought maybe Southern Illinois was not going to be nearly as good as they as everyone thought preseason. A win over a P5 team in the Big Ten, all of a sudden, okay, Southern Illinois is back in the conversation. That's how crazy this thing is this early in the year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, you know what? That's a perfect segue. Let's bring up that Southern Illinois game from a breaking it down standpoint. You know, there was a back-and-forth affair with Northwestern. And look, we know that Northwestern is not Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State. We know that, you know, Illinois State beat Northwestern just a couple years ago, I think in 2016, in a field goal fest, if I seem to remember correctly. Southern Illinois, yeah, maybe a little up and down this year, you know, to lose like they did to an FCS and then to beat a Big Ten. Interesting, you know. But just a couple facts about the game. I mean, they were down going into the second quarter, but they came back and they were ahead at the half. And they were tied at the half. They were ahead going into the fourth quarter. And then SIU scored two touchdowns after a Northwestern field goal. And they were ahead 31-17 until kind of a meaningless touchdown late by Northwestern made it 31-24. But no matter what, big deal. That's the first P5 win for Southern Illinois since Indiana back, I think, in 2006. And Southern Illinois had beaten UMass by about 25 points back in 2019. People might remember that was a big argument for the Salukis making the playoffs, and I don't think they did. And that was, in fact, I remember that they didn't because I talked to Coach Nick Hill that day. I remember that was kind of frustrating for his program, thinking, you know, we're in the Missouri Valley. I think they won seven games, which a lot of Missouri Valley teams get in with seven wins. And they had beaten an FBS by 22, 25 points. Now, granted, UMass was the worst FBS team in the FBS, and that had a lot to do with it. They also beat Northern Illinois about a decade ago. Those are the two group of five wins that they've had since they beat Indiana out of the Big Ten back in 2006. So SIU doesn't have a whole lot of these wins. It was a big deal, you know, and they play a P5 type team or an FBS, you know, pretty much every year. So big win. Something that SIU can build off of, and it makes up for their earlier losses. So, and you know, just last thing on NDSU, I wanted to bring up, and I generally avoid trying to regurgitate stats to you in our recap segment of the podcast, because you know, it's been 24 or 48 hours since the game. The diehards that really wanted to see the game saw the game, and unless it's a 300-400 yard game, we're not going to delve too deeply into the individual accolades. That stuff, a lot of times in this day and age, you can look that up in 5 minutes after the game. You know, it's not the way it was 30 years ago, but it is now. But Hunter Lipke at North Dakota State, I remember us saying this, and let's just repeat it, after the national title game, because he had a great postseason run. If there is a kid that sums up North Dakota State, it's this guy. I mean, he's like that fullback, H-back type of player, just a spark plug. He's the kind of guy that in the right offense in the NFL could have a job for a long time, because he's just that consummate kind of overachieving just ball player, you know, to go along with the fact that NDSU's lunch pail offensive lineman type guys, you know, the ones that this program really, really churns out because of commitment to depth at that position and the kind of kids you get out of the Midwest. Lipke is one of those type of guys, and he just owned Arizona the other day. In some ways, I kind of look at him and I go, not only does he sum up North Dakota State, he kind of sums up the whole level in a way, you know, kind of a, okay, maybe he's not 6'5", 250, and can run a 4.6, you know, maybe he's not, but he's a football player, you know, and I know that's an overused cliche by coaches, but he really is. And Arizona had no answer for him the other day. That I thought was very impressive, because, you know, a guy like that who was completely ignored by the Big Ten and the Big 12 in his neck of the woods, you know, to dominate Arizona like that, I thought was amazing. I mean, it was a, and just to, you know, okay, what did North Dakota State do well against Arizona? Definitely north-south, and that kind of fits Lepke. And really the way they do things up front and the whole bit, that's what NDSU does. Arizona was a very east-west team, very finesse. They happen to do that pretty well, and Knock has brought up repeatedly that might be the thing you need to do to get them off their train tracks and potentially knock them off, you know, and that's why we bring up Montana State a lot. If Tommy Mellott had a whole game in the national title game to do what he does best, it might have been a lot more interesting, because he's a very talented dual threat quarterback. So, yeah, that gave him fits at times. But overall, there's no question who won the line of scrimmage in that game. It was North Dakota State, and Hunter Lipke was the star of the game. So, you know, Knock, I think you had a certain award you thought might have his name on it. you want to dig into that before we – Well, I mean, break down the rest of the games?
Well, here's the thing. I look at Hunter Lipke, and I think the main part is a great. He's a great runner. Yeah. But again, I don't know how many teams are going to draft him as a running back. So as you mentioned, he's going to be that H-back type guy. He's going to be kind of that fullback slash tight end hybrid. You know, the guys that I think of, like one that comes to mind, and he made a living off of it, John Kuhn for Green Bay. Mm-hmm. Rodgers absolutely loved him. I think the fact that Lepke catches the ball as well as he does, he had 3 catches for 65 yards and a touchdown.
Yep.
That makes him even more attractive to the NFL. And the fact that he did this against a P5 program, against guys that are, some of these guys probably will play on Sundays in some form or fashion. But this means he's also going to, you know, he'll play on special teams, which means, you know, he can make a living there when he does get his shot. But the fact that he can catch the football as well as run the football and do well, I think that speaks volumes. And I think the fact that, you know, we kind of talked about this for when we opened up the podcast back in week zero. We talked about Isaiah Land and the opportunity it could have had for him if he would have been able to play against North Carolina these things matter for NFL scouts. And I thought Lupke put on one hell of a tape when we get to the combine and we get to the scouting portion of the season next spring and we get ready for the draft. I think Hunter Lupke definitely solidified himself some draft stock, whether that's seventh, sixth round or how high he could go. I'm not entirely sure. Again, there are smarter people that know that better than I, but I feel like with this type of game and the versatility he brings, I got to imagine this guy's getting a shot to an NFL team, NFL training camp.
Yeah, we bring that up a lot. Anthony's got a great point there. When the NFL scouts come around, they're going to look for that film, and they're going to love it. So, you know, that's the first thing. And I brought up this anecdote before that, you know, whenever I talk to draft prospects who are kind of fringe day three guys out of the FCS, it's very consistent. I remember asking Kyle LaLetta, the quarterback out of Richmond, who was eventually drafted by the Giants. And I was like, let me guess, the film from your Virginia win, your junior year. I was like, everybody asked for that first, right? And he goes, absolutely. He goes, I did have a good game, you know, and our line dominated Virginia's line, which was rare for an FCS team. So we looked really good on film. That's the stuff the NFL scouts look for out of an FCS player. You know, if you dominated a P5 program, it's going to turn heads, and you're right. So, we spent a lot of time on NDSU in Southern Illinois, and rightfully so. Very impressive results. It was a good weekend for those two. And, I think we're going to break down a couple of the key points coming out of the weekend here in a second. Give you our take on that, but first, you know, I love this point by Knock when we were kind of brainstorming what we wanted to talk about this week. It's a great point by Anthony. What does this Appalachian State phenomenon do from the standpoint of how FCS current FCS programs look at one of their own? I mean, App State was in the FCS ranks about a decade ago. I don't remember what year exactly they went. I want to say it was 09 or 2010 or 11, somewhere in there where Georgia Southern and App State left the SoCon. And since then, you know, we've seen Coastal Carolina do their thing last year. Coastal was in the FCS until 2006. So, you know, Coastal's left and done some things. Liberty has done some things. You know, some programs maybe haven't done as much. UMass moving up, that hasn't really panned out that well in recent years. But if they, you know, App State is probably the best example. And, you know, they go to Texas A&M last week and they win. Okay, what does that do? In turn, that brings College game day to campus. That place was a zoo this weekend, and then they win on that crazy, you know, Hail Mary pass. Knock, what do you think what App State does in the psyche of an FCS program that might have what it takes to move into the FBS ranks?
Well, I think the fact that App State's having its success. Now, again, we'll see. Again, I think this is a team that's going to compete for the Sun Belt, obviously, with what they're able to do. But, again, you look at it, since they left, it's been a decade. You know, if we're talking about roughly 2010, I'll give it a couple of years, between 2009 and 2011 when they left, they're here at this point now. Now, again, App State's won some big games. We all remember what they did against Michigan when they were still an FCS team.
Absolutely.
But I think this is the reason why you saw JMU make the move they did.
Yeah.
I think this is the reason why you saw Jacksonville State do what they did, you know?
Yeah.
There's a reason for it because, again, you know, you're trying to compete and you're also trying to get more dollars and you're trying to get better facilities and you're trying to upgrade the university so the university becomes bigger and better than the state schools and all of those types of things. So I think what App State is doing is great from the sense of, okay, hey, they're a former FCS power, because we all remember they won three straight national championships.
Yep.
But at the same time, too, this does give to the vision of leaving the FCS.
Yeah.
You know? And now, again, college football is going to change. It has to. All right? I know we hear about the FBS. They're going to expand to 12 teams. I don't know if Appalachian State's going to be that team on a year in and year out without winning the conference. And that's if their conference gets an automatic bid, if they're going to be a team that's in that. So now, again, I know college football is about big, big, big business, and they're about dollars. It's not about winning trophies much anymore. I mean, it's great if you can win a trophy. You know, Alabama probably enjoys their trophy case a lot right now.
I bet.
But at the same time, too, it does beg the question, do you want to win FCS championships, or do you want to have more national relevance where you actually get game day? I mean, you and I last year on this podcast, we were clamoring. The Big Sky Conference put a video out there. Montana put a video out there. They put out a campaign to get game day in Missoula.
Yeah.
And they couldn't do it. And they got game day in Boone, North Carolina for Troy versus Appalachian State.
I know.
So and it kind of lends it to, okay, unfortunately, as much as I hate to say this because I do love the FCS level, this lends to it because, let's face it, if North Dakota State could find a regional or geographic partner, North Dakota State's gone. They just don't have one. That's the unfortunate. I mean, let's put it really on the table here. North Dakota State would be gone by now in the FCS had it not for the fact that they are in North Dakota. And they're not going to get a big – I don't know if they'd get a big invite or a Big Ten invite. Maybe the Pac-12 calls them up, but again, that's a lot more travel. So, you know, right now, I think what App State is good for App State, but at the same time, too, this is, I think, going to lean to, okay, more programs aren't going to stick around. If they get an invitation to go to the FBS, they're going to go.
Possibly. Possibly so. I mean, possibly is probably not even the right word, is it? I mean,
well, and you have your other outlier because Idaho had to come back too.
Yeah, they did. And you don't be surprised if like UMass does too, by the way. But that's not geographical. That's other reasons. But yeah, I always wonder about NDSU from the standpoint of if there's something could be worked out for a football only situation where they're not flying their volleyball team all over the country every week, you know, that sort of thing. How much does that have to do with it is a good question, because we all know that NDSU could win the MAC, no question.
Yep.
This year, if they played in the MAC, in the Group of Five level, I would venture to say North Dakota State would win the MAC. They would win on any given year against half the Big Ten, probably more than half the Big 12. Could they consistently compete with the Michigan or Ohio State? I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, if they're on that level, they're recruiting on that level too.
Well, that's the problem is, yeah, it's App State is maybe in a little better area for recruiting because of its proximity to Florida, Georgia. I'd have to break their roster down. The Hampton Roads area of Virginia is not far away, and that's a very talent-rich area. Just ask Virginia Tech and James Madison. There's more close by. It's probably a little bit easier to convince kids, but then again, the stadium is still half as big as going to the Big House. It's actually less than half as big as, you know, playing in it, the Big Blue Bloods, and kind of wonder how many more seats can you cram in between those mountains, right?
Mm-hmm.
but anyways, that was a really cool thing, and yes, that's a pretty heavy that could work against the FCS. When the more situations you see, like with Coastal last year with Jamie Chadwell, or what you saw with App this weekend, the more you wonder how much that pecks away at the FCS. There's no question. And don't get me wrong. I mean, 90% of the schools at the FCS have no business thinking about the FBS. You know, they just don't have the infrastructure for it. They don't have the cash flow to absorb that move, which is expensive. But then it can also, you know, have pay rewards down the line. You know what they say, you got to have money to make money. but no matter what, that was still fun to watch. Just like the A&M win was fun to watch, just like the Michigan win when App State, like you brought up, beat Michigan back, 12 years ago. Yeah. I mean, that was a lot of fun, and it's fun to see. And it's just fun to see ESPN Game Day understanding that there's damn good football other places other than Columbus, Ohio, and, you know, Los Angeles and Gainesville and Tuscaloosa. Yeah. There, and, you know, one thing I'll say, too, about ESPN Game Day, like when I got to be at Game Day for James Madison back in 2017, that atmosphere was better than the atmospheres I used to see as a student in Gainesville. You know, the show started in the mid-90s. They came to Gainesville all the time. I stood right there, right behind the camera, right in front of the cameras as a student, you know, many moons ago. And it was always a big deal to have Lee Corso and Kirk Herbstreit on campus. You believe that show's that old, by the way, Knock? Because I'm old. And what James Madison had blew the socks off of what we had. Now, granted, the show wasn't as big a deal back then. But if you want to talk about a game changer, pun intended, ESPN Game Day coming to your campus can turn some heads. You know, going to a nice bowl game certainly can, especially if it's a big, big bowl game, like when Boise State did it. But ESPN Game Day is arguably better than going to a mid-range bowl game that you wouldn't think maybe Coastal would go to. You know, I thought that was a great point that Knock wanted to add in to discuss, because it's a powerful topic. So
it is. And we'll see what happens, because they got JMU this week.
They do, and I think the JMU crowd is not usually very intimidated, but they might be right now. They might be right now. I think there was a topic that you had brought up in our brainstorming session, and this is a valid point because of what we saw results-wise this past weekend. How deep is the Missouri Valley Conference? And I don't think we thought it was quite this deep in the preseason. So, Knock, take it away on what you're thinking there. And what about the Big Sky, too? I mean, those are the two best conferences. I don't think anybody questions that. How deep are those two?
I mean, I look at it this way. I look at the Big Sky right now. If you're talking top to bottom, and you and I kind of talked about this on previous episodes, we're talking top to bottom. I think the Big Sky Conference has the best case as the best conference this year. Because you can make an argument for a lot of teams right now. Eastern Washington's still a traditional power. We haven't talked about them the way we have in years past. Obviously, they don't have the electricity that they had in Eric Berrier, obviously, the last couple of years. But it's still a good football team. You look at Sacramento State. What the job Troy Taylor has done is outstanding. And you know he's probably going to get picked somewhere along the line. But for right now, they just keep winning. And they just pounded Northern Iowa this past weekend in the Big Sky Missouri Valley Challenge Series, which finished up 3-3. So while the Valley has had the edge four out of the last 5 years, this year the Big Sky, they finished with a tie. But again, Sacramento State, big win over UNI, who traditionally is one of the better teams in the Valley. So yeah. I think for me, my question for the Valley is just how deep are they? Southern Illinois getting the win over Northwestern is big, but as we've learned, just because you get a win over a P5 FBS, that does not lead to wins later on in the year. And again, Southern Illinois is still in a tough conference, obviously. So my curiosity is, we saw North Dakota. They played Northern Arizona, who's a team you really like, Brian. They did get the edge. They did get the win there for North Dakota. So North Dakota is going to be tough, I think they've shown that. But right now, I'll put it to you this way, Brian. I trust more teams out of the Big Sky Conference, and I could reasonably say, okay, I could see these teams being able to beat some of the more other teams in the middle and lower half of the Valley. I think the fact that – I think you look at North Dakota State by name and pedigree alone, obviously. South Dakota State, same thing. But right now, who's your third best – third best team is probably Missouri State, and then your fourth best team is North Dakota.
Yeah.
You know, right now, and for the Big Sky Conference, you argue Montana's probably the best team right now, at least on paper. You look at Montana State's in the mix. I think you definitely throw Sacramento State in there as well, the two-time defending Big Sky champions, and you got Weber State in there. And then you can go through a whole bunch of other teams that you could make a case for. So I think honestly, Brian, this year, I think the Valley is going to be, I'm not going to say easier, but I am going to say I don't think the Valley is nearly going to be, or is going to be as deep as it has been in years past. I think you can look at those four teams that I just mentioned, North Dakota, Missouri State, South Dakota State, North Dakota State, as probably being your primary teams fighting it out for the top.
Yeah. No, that's a good take. I mean, I think usually we feel like in the Missouri Valley, which let's be honest, folks, the Missouri Valley has a couple fewer schools, I think, than the Big Sky. I think the two or three schools fewer. So when we say this, it's not exactly comparing apples to apples, but Missouri Valley, I think this year it looks like has four teams that are clearly below the top echelon, I guess. Like Knox said, Northern Iowa usually is a massive factor. So far this year, they really haven't been. They're 0-3. Western Illinois has been near the bottom for years now. Indiana State generally, they've had a couple good years, and so has Western Illinois for that matter. But Indiana State, South Dakota, you know, those schools are what, a combined 2-10, and they haven't even hit, you know, conference play, where that generally is where those teams pick up losses. There's a lot of times, you know, even the bottom echelon, I guess that's not really a good way to put it, is it? Bottom echelon, the bottom part of the league, they may have a good, you know, pre-conference play schedule, and then they hit the conference play and they get chopped to shreds, you know. Well, these four schools look like wins for everybody above them already, and they're a combined 2 out of 10 coming out of non-conference play. You know, that's not typical of the Missouri Valley. You might have one or two schools that look like a gimme win, but, you know, back in the day, and when I say that, I'm not talking about the 1950s. I'm talking about, like, just a couple years ago. If you were going on the road to Indiana State or Southern Illinois, or if another team was kind of having a bad year, if you were going on the road and you were South Dakota State or you were Northern Iowa, not necessarily North Dakota State, but those kind of, you know, Northern Iowa, South Dakota State, teams like that, Illinois State, that's generally pretty good, you had to worry every time you went on the road. That's why we always called it the SEC or the FCS, because the SEC's the same way. If the Florida Gators go to Ole Miss, don't count that as a win until you come out of there with it. And the Missouri Valley's the same way. Well, this year it might not be. And that's kind of what I think Knox getting at. You know, the Big Sky looks maybe there seem to be fewer gimme wins in the Big Sky. And they have more schools. So, yeah. You know, I think Knox got a good point there.
I think the only gimme win at this point is Cal Poly. Again, Bo Baldwin's a heck of a football coach. I think that's going to take some time to turn around. Again, because this is a team that's trying to go from when it ran the triple option to running a more modern spread offense that we saw from Bo Baldwin when he was at Eastern Washington. So Cal Poly looks to be that, maybe they're that team in there. But again, like we can go down the line. You got Sacramento State, who looks really tough. You got UC Davis in California, that's tough. Obviously, we know Coach Hawkins and the job he does over there, they're tough. You got the two Montana schools. Eastern Washington's no slouch. I know they lost Eric Berrier, but they're still a good football team.
Yep.
Coach Best does a good job. You still got Jay Hill over at Weber State. You still have Portland State with Coach Barnum. He's got a talented squad. I mean, I'm having a hard time looking at it and going, okay, am I going to be shocked if, you know, one team upsets the other? Like, I just think that the Big Sky Conference is deep, and there's going to be some good teams that probably don't make the playoffs this year from the Big Sky Conference. And it's going to be really interesting. I think it's doing some interesting things that I'm just, like, sitting there going, like, wow, there's no easy game. There is no, okay, hey. Like, there are some games when you look at the majority of North Dakota State's schedule, you're circling, okay, South Dakota State, you circle that game on their schedule. maybe you circle you and I usually. Maybe you find that other team that's good in the Valley that year. Okay, you're going to circle that one. But when you look in the Big Sky Conference schedule, okay, I'm circling Montana State, Eastern Washington. I got Portland State at Montana this weekend circled on the calendar because we've seen Portland State go into Washington Grizzly Stadium and ruin the Grizz plans. So, like I said, it's just interesting. Does this mean that at the end of the year when we get into the playoffs that the Valley won't be well represented deep into the postseason? Probably not. But again, just in terms of depth and strength, I think that the Big Sky Conference just has it this year, and I think that just speaks volumes to the coaching that is over there for sure. And like I said, Brian and I can definitely go a long way. Again, you are listening to Brian McLaughlin and Anthony Nockrunner, BMAC and the Knox FCS show, as we are talking all things FCS here in as we finished up week number three and we're recapping things. Brian, is there anything else you wanted to add to that in terms of the Valley and the Big Sky and how we compare those two?
Well, not really, because even though we may have one or two, I'm not going to say gimme wins. Again, I hate that word with these conferences. Even though it may seem like we have a little bit more of that in the Missouri Valley, we're still talking about two conferences full of parity. There's no question. And and we say it every year because it's true. There's just not that many easy games, you know. We have other conferences where we might have an established power, and yet, you know, they may play their hardest game or two the first week or two of October, and then we look at the schedule and we go, well, they're going to win the conference title. The next month is gimme, and it really is a gimme. That's not the case with the Missouri Valley. I mean, the Missouri Valley and Big Sky, I guarantee you, we're sitting there the weekend before Thanksgiving, and we're looking at the schedule going, I don't know what the hell's going to happen this weekend, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but hey, to wrap things up for this week's recap, we're going to wrap the recap, talk about a Department of Redundancy Department mm-hmm. situation. You know, we've touched on Weber State. Knock. What do you like about this Weber State team? We think they're a little underrated by the polls. I feel very strongly they should be in the top 10. I voted them number 4 in the media poll this week. Maybe that's a little high, but they deserve to be in the top 10. What do you like, knowing the Big Sky the way you do, having worked in the Big Sky region for 5 years, how does this team compare? What do you like about this team?
Well, I think what I like is the fact that their offense is just putting up points.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing. What do we always count on from Weber State when you've talked to Jay Hill and those guys? It's always great special teams. You're never really going to be able to beat them in that department.
Right.
They don't beat themselves in that department. They're going to play tremendous defense. You're going to earn everything. And at the same time, too, they run the football very efficiently. But what we're seeing, and I think this speaks volumes, too, because of what we're seeing from one particular guy, and that would be their quarterback, Bronson Barron. And I think he's done a phenomenal job. I think he threw over 300 yards. I think it was their last game. Bronson Barron already, you know, throwing for 722 yards, 6 touchdowns, averaging 240 a game so far, completing 62.65% of his passes. He's got 152 rating. He's been impressive, and I think that's been the biggest thing with what he's been able to do. You go back to some of the plays that he made against Utah State, just the fact the way he played in those games. Again, I think that's been the biggest key for Weber State. It's just the offense is humming. And if the offense is humming, Weber State's now even more dangerous. And, again, I think that could be the difference maker, because when you look at Weber State, they've just never had that elite-level passing game. They've had elite players at the skill positions, but they just haven't had that elite passing game to put it all together to, you know, make it that offense even more of a threat to go along with that tough defense. So I really like what I'm seeing out of Weber State. They got UC Davis this week. I know we'll preview that game a little bit later on. But it just Weber State's been impressive. Again, they got a win over an FBS, which is always good. And you add that to the resume. But we're really going to find out because Weber State's got a tough schedule and they get it kicked off with UC Davis. So I like what I'm seeing from Weber State just from the quarterback position because that seems to be the biggest difference maker. You know, last year they had a lot of injuries. They had injuries going into that JMU game. I believe it was the second week of the season. So like I said, I think that's the biggest thing here, Brian. Just much, much better quarterback play.
That was always the big knock, I promise I won't do that stupid joke anymore, Anthony. that was always the big knock with Weber State is exactly what Anthony's saying here. That yes, let me throw this out there. We used to do this thing at Hero Sports where going into the playoffs, we would take the measurables, you know, of what a special teams unit has, and we would rank all 24 teams, you know, who has the best kick return unit statistically, who has the best punt return, who has the best punter average, best field goal kicker percentage-wise. And you take these categories, punt return, you know, coverage team, who gives up the, you know, the least amount of yards when they cover punts. And we would add it up because when you get in the playoffs, special teams is so big. It's so big. It is a lot of times the dividing line. And Weber State would dominate that. Every year we'd come into the playoffs once they started kind of making their run. By 2017, when they scared the hell out of James Madison in Harrisonburg that year, from then on, they've been huge on special teams. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Well, Jay Hill coached under Urban Meyer, who used to single-handedly oversee special teams. He believes in that philosophy. He coached under Kyle Whittingham at Utah and Urban at Utah. So Jay Hill believes in that, that deserves a lot of focus. And because of that, he's always got a great staff member running special teams. He looks in on it and has a big part of it. Like Knox said, defense is big. It's always been the offense. So great point. This team's special. I think they're better than anybody expected. Well, and we have high expectations of Weber State every year, but I think they're better than everybody expected.
Well, the funny part is, Brian, I think after last year, at least in some circles, I think a lot of people felt like, okay, Weber State had their run and it's going to fall off now. So I think a lot of people kind of slept on Weber State as we talk about the Montana schools and how they've dominated and all those types of things. I think that's been a big one, too, is that people kind of have slept on the Wildcats, and I'm sure Coach Jay Hill doesn't mind that whatsoever. So yeah. With that, Brian, let's move. Jackson State continues to roll up and continue to put up wins. They're doing a phenomenal job. I guess there was a fiery halftime speech from Coach Prime as Grambling State was giving Jackson State a fits in the first half, but boy, did they answer.
I know. I'm never going to get used to saying Coach Dion or Coach Prime. That's just weird. So, Jackson State, interesting team. If anything has impressed me the most so far, I guess it's the fact that they seem to be more consistent than they were last year. And that people might be going, consistent? You know, they were really good. Yeah, well, they were really good, but they had hiccups during the year. So far, that's not been the case. They're playing pretty good defense in general. They just hammered Grambling, which is a consistent, rival. And you know, the schedule, where are they even going to get pushed the rest of the way? I mean, the SWAC's better than the MEAC overall, but it's not, I just can't see anybody keeping up with this Jackson State team. They're a machine. And, you know, I look at the schedule, I mean, they have a game with Campbell, and Campbell's pretty good. You know, Campbell could push them. That's a non-conference game. But other than that, you know, I mean, they should be heavily favored in every game, you know, all the way through Alcorn the week before Thanksgiving. So they could very well go undefeated this year and cruise into the the championship games of the HBCU ranks. And once again, we're going to be sitting there wondering what would this team do
in the playoffs.
You know, since we have them in the poll,
yeah,
in the top 12, I think, in both polls, without having that right in front of me. I mean,
yeah, they're 11th.
What are they? 11th?
Yep.
Yeah. That's so, I mean, they're getting respect in the polls. Boy, it begs the question once again, what would they do if they were able to take a run at an FCS national title and not just an HBCU national title?
No, I agree with you on that, Brian. Let me interrupt you for just a second and ask you this question. Okay. If you are the playoff committee, say they, you know, and I think they will go undefeated. Like you said, they will have teams that will push them. But if they go undefeated, where do you seed them? I mean, I think they're a top eight seed, no question, if they were eligible for the playoffs, because obviously if they do go undefeated, they'll be in the Celebration Bowl and not the playoffs. But if you had to seed them, where – I mean, I'm thinking top four seed, but do you put them three, you put them two, four? I don't put them number one as long as North Dakota State doesn't lose in the Valley.
Well, you know, I hate to be a cop-out, especially here in September when copping out is the easiest way to go. But there's about 5,000 moving parts that would have something to say about them being a seed. Obviously, if they're undefeated, they're going to be a seed. Top four, I wouldn't think so.
No.
And the reason would be schedule strength. There's no question that would work against them. If you put them up against the resume of a Montana State or a South Dakota State, and let's say Montana State or South Dakota State have only dropped one game to NDSU or the Grizz, or, you know, and again, remember, we throw away the Oregon State losses in consideration of the playoffs, so Montana State's blowout loss to Oregon State's not a factor in this. If you're comparing that, I'm sorry, but going 9-1 against the FCS in the Big Sky or Missouri Valley is going to weigh way higher than going undefeated in the SWAC.
Fair enough.
But Jackson State's going to be a seed if they're undefeated, you know, because that – so, yeah, they would fall somewhere in the 5-8 range. You know, as everybody knows with the playoff structure, they seed 1-8, and those teams get a first-round bye the week of Thanksgiving. So they all get to go home and have turkey and not worry about a game that weekend. That's kind of one of the rewards of being a seed. Jackson State would be eating turkey at home. I don't question that. Looking at what I'm looking at, they do not want to flirt with any of these teams, including Campbell. Campbell, as it turns out, if they beat them, Campbell might be the toughest team on the schedule. The other argument might be Tennessee State, who they beat 16-3. You know, Florida A&M has had that off-the-field mess that kind of changed the dynamic of that game. That game probably should have been their best game on the schedule as far as, you know, who's going to do what. But no matter what, to think of where Jackson State was just 4 or 5 years ago, which was a perpetual 3-4-game winner maybe, you know, everybody would beat Mississippi Valley State and Texas Southern, you know, in the SWAC. But in general, you know, those were the only gimme wins for Jackson State. And they might beat it, you know, Alabama A&M or something, you know. But they won 3 or 4. It was perennially Alcorn State, the land of McNairs, Grambling, Prairie View, you know. And now Jackson State's just turned it on its ear because of what's been happening since Deion came on board, and testament to recruiting, because Deion brings attention. NIL has helped a lot because Jackson State's alumni are playing by the rules and doing things that are allowed now, you know, that we never would have thought would have been allowed. So I'm curious about them. I am curious, though, out of the MEAC. Remember, Jackson State last year lost to South Carolina State out of the MEAC.
Yep.
Nobody saw that coming. Talking about putting some money down on a game. If somebody had put money on South Carolina State, I'm sure some of the Bulldogs fans did. You know, Darius Leonard probably put a couple bucks on it since he came from there. You know, Jackson State looks like the world beaters, but there's a 3-0 I got to mention this, and we may look back at this in September or in October or November or even December. There's a 3-0 North Carolina Central team that just beat a very good CAA team in New Hampshire. That's big. And beat North Carolina A&T, one of their big rivals, who has moved out of the MEAC and it didn't go to the SWAC. They moved on to another conference. So those are big wins for North Carolina Central. And I am curious to see if maybe that's a team that could push Jackson State should they both get to the Celebration Bowl. But as it stands right now, Jackson State looks like they're going to have their first undefeated team regular season in umpteen million years. I don't know if it was when Walter Payton was there or when the last time was Jackson State did that. I know they used to do that kind of thing back in the day. But definitely a strong-looking start. You know, Jackson State, just to sum up, first of all, they drew 35,000 to their home game the other day. I mean, if that doesn't tell you anything about fan support. They've been playing consistently in front of big crowds. You know, the two classics they opened with was 40,000, 52,000, 35,000 at home this past weekend. They're getting the crowds. They've outscored their opponents about 140 to like 30 in three games. They're pretty good. Mm-hmm. So, last thing, and I'll wrap it with this, knock, and then throw it to you for final thoughts. A couple other things that have jumped out. You know, William and Mary in Delaware look really good in the CAA. Villanova got knocked around, by the way, by Army, but that's not really that big of an insult because Army is clearly the best service academy right now. They've surpassed Navy in recent years. They're really scary under Jeff Monken, and if you're not quite ready for an Army attack, it can get out of hand. They do that really well. So William & Mary and Delaware playing really well. Delaware's win over Rhode Island, Nock talked about it earlier. Statement when, you know, the questions begin, is this the best Delaware team since, you know, XXX year? You know, I mean, that's a good question. We'll continue to learn more. Chattanooga, we're going to get into their game this week in our preview segment, which is going to be a separate podcast starting this week. Chattanooga looks really good. They're playing well. Mercer, who Knock, I think, has a man crush on, but rightfully so. They're a strong program. Incarnate Word, we've already mentioned. Here's an interesting thing to drop in here. The Patriot League, as it stands, may be the best it's been in 6 or 7 years from the standpoint of having two really good quality teams. Fordham is 3-0, and they beat a CAA this week, which I think it's Albany. When a Patriot beats a top half, or even really any CAA team, it's a big deal. So Fordham's 3-0. Holy Cross is 3-0 with the FBS win. You know, they're going to have to run into each other here at some point. But the last time I remember seeing two Patriot League teams this good and potentially get that second bid out of the Patriot League was 2015 when there was Colgate and Fordham. And Fordham had Chase Edmonds. And Colgate had that really well-balanced team that ended up beating James Madison in the playoffs, which was a massive upset. You do kind of wonder, could one of these teams go 11-0? And I can't remember if they're playing 12 games this year or not. I think they are, yeah. But could one go undefeated and one go like 10-1, per se, without having all the number of games in front of me? I think possibly. And if, depending on the dynamics around the country, I think a good, like, let's say Fordham beat Holy Cross. If Holy Cross is, let's say, 10-1, and they beat an FBS like they did, Holy Cross is getting into the playoffs as an at-large if Fordham beats them. You know, Fordham's playing as good a ball as it has since Chase graduated. And that's big. Of course, Chase is still in the NFL doing his thing. So Holy Cross looked really good. They hammered Yale. Granted, the Ivy League, it's worth mentioning, the Ivy League just opened play last weekend. They always open play about 3 weeks later than the rest of the FCS. They opened. Yale might have been a little, you know, raw and green in their first game, but it wasn't even close. Holy Cross is a machine this year. So I thought that was worthy of mention because we're always curious. You know, outside the top four or five conferences in the FCS, could one of the other conferences get a second bid, get an at-large, aside from just their automatic berth? You know, in the Patriot League might just have that dynamic, which means somebody in the Big Three or Big Five conferences are not going to get in with their 7-4 record because, you know, just depends on the dynamic. So that's it from my ranting, long-winded self, Knock. What do you think? What do you think all that? And are your eyes crossed and your head spinning? You need to take some Tylenol after all that, or what?
Nah,
what do you think?
Nah, I'm good. I do got some whiskey on my name on it. You know, a little later. But I'll be honest with you, man. I think you kind of pointed out Delaware. Man, Delaware is looking good. That's a big ranked win over Rhode Island. You know, I'm looking at Delaware. To me, they're looking like the favorite out of the CAA, and could they be dangerous if we're talking about them come playoff time? And if they do exactly what they've been doing these last 3 weeks, I mean, it's a long season. I know we're gonna get into conference play, but you tell me, Brian. I mean, and this is my final thought. I think Delaware, as I mentioned earlier to start when we talked about the polls, they're a team that looks to me like a green arrow as they're moving up and up and up. I don't know if I expected Coach Curry to have them, you know, moving up this quickly, but hey, I'm all for it. Delaware is a blue blood, and getting them back on track and getting talking about them again, that's even better for the FCS.
It is, and we've been saying that for years. Delaware's problem the last number of years has been offense, there's no question. What's interesting about what Ryan Cardy is doing, and, you know, as a refresher, folks, Ryan was a big part of those amazing offenses at Sam Houston. He played ball for Delaware back in the day. He was a part of some of those great New Hampshire coaching staffs just before he went to Sam Houston. He knows offense. He's a good offensive mind. He's a good young coach, and I can say that in my late 40s, a good coaching mind. What's interesting is that Ryan will tell you, oh, that's not me, okay, but there's obviously a noticeable difference in what's going on here. Delaware's not been horrible over the last number of years. I'd say the last 5 years, you know, they've been tough for the most part. They just haven't made much of a playoff run when they've gotten in, if they've gotten in, you know. And now you got a quarterback, Nolan Henderson, that, you know, there were doubts about over the last couple of years. And Nolan's a big part of getting it done. You know, he's really been a big part of this. So,
well,
a key part of it, you know. So.
Brian, the stat line for him this past weekend in the first half, 29-34, 379, 4 tutties.
Yeah. What does that tell you? Okay, you go back to that same old argument we always joke about. X's or the O's, Jimmy's or the Joe's. And, of course, coaches always say, you're forgetting a third one, culture. Okay. All right, that's an intangible thing. But the X's and the O's, Jimmy's and the Joes. Maybe Nolan, you know, maybe something didn't click in the past. Even though Danny Rocco's a damn good coach, you know, maybe something didn't quite fit. And now it appears to be, plus Nolan's way more experienced now, let's be honest. But he is part of what's clicking at Delaware. And, you know, sometimes a different style of play can fire up a young man, and whatever it is, something is happening here, and it's happening right at a perfect time because James Madison is gone. Jacksonville State and Sam Houston are heading out soon. Those teams have been in the national title game or won national titles ever since 2015. Just in the last 6-7 years, you know, and that's a big void in the FCS. Who's going to fill that? Well, we've already talked about the Montana schools, the Weber States, the Delawares. But But like with Weber State, Delaware sometimes didn't quite have the spark it needed on offense. And this year, they both have found it, you know. So
Green.
That's been something interesting to watch first 3 weeks. First three and a half weeks with week zero? Or is it like 3.1 weeks?
3 points, 3 weeks and a quarter.
three weeks and a quarter, even though 10 teams played in week zero. We'll call it three and a quarter. So anyways, folks, well, that wraps our recap, which is, again, redundant. That wraps that segment of our week three, week four podcast in the Gridiron Heroics Podcast Network. I should have mentioned that early, but we'll get in the habit of doing that. We'll tell you more about some special things going on there, too, coming up. But for now, folks, as always, thanks for listening. So long, everybody.